aftermath of the traumas of the Holocaust, and now you've returned to Germany for the first time. How do you like being in Berlin these days?
First of all, Berlin is as international, as sophisticated, as elegant, as remarkable as I, even beyond what I anticipated, and the old and the new and the history, and it's spectacular. It's very exciting for me to be back in Germany, where I was born.
So are there any downsides to that?
There's no...
Is it any way difficult?
You know, that's an interesting question. It's a question I was asked a lot when I was in the States. It's not difficult because, as I mentioned, I wasn't raised with any hatred towards Germany. I don't feel any hatred. This is where I was born. This was my first language. My mother kept the culture of this European, Eastern European background going. And even the bedding, you know, I always had a down quilt. You know, I always had a dachana, and I always had, you know, I always had all these European things. And I was raised with a deep sadness over what had happened in my own personal history, with my parents both being survivors. And I was born in Bergen-Belsen, but somehow it feels very natural for me to be in Germany now on my 60th birthday.
You've worked as an artist for many years now, and your focus is on light and beauty. What are your resources? How have you been able to go beyond this legacy of loss?
I think it's a very, very good question, and it's been a life struggle. I carry around a tremendous sense of how do you live a meaningful life, and how do you live a life in which you are entitled to your own feelings? Because when you have parents who survived Auschwitz, the bar for living is very high. You can't cry, because how can you cry? You didn't lose anyone in Auschwitz. You can't be cold, because you're not freezing in Auschwitz. There's no range for the normal human feelings. And I think for most of my life, I was very busy protecting my parents' feelings, trying to make them happy. And I think in that sphere, pushing down all those feelings is what really prompted me ultimately to take my desire to make marks and become a painter. Because in the painting, I could express what I was feeling and not bother anybody with it, and deal with what is meaningful in life, and how do you live a life, and how do you be happy. And to my mother, beauty gave her great joy. I mean, everything, really beauty. And she talked about how in the camps, the first day she was in Auschwitz, she was with her best friend from Hungary. And, you know, the Hungarian Jews were taken the last year of the war. And she was with her best friend, who was wearing a black scarf, and it was raining in the camps. And a Nazi looked at her friend and said, "You look halbtot, you look half dead," and shot her in front of my mother the first day she was there. So my mother realized instantly that the idea was to look healthy, and that every day they checked your hands. She pinched her hands, she pinched her cheeks, she pinched her hands, she pinched her cheeks. It was like that, to look healthy. And the emphasis growing up was to always be very vibrant and robust and healthy. And you could never, I'm never sick, thank God, but because you weren't allowed to be sick. There was no room for anything weak. You survived, and, you know. And I found the light, and I'll talk about that in the talk tonight. Really, in 30 years of working, the light just kept surviving. It had a life of its own, in a way. And I felt better after I painted, so I kept painting.
Sounds like a very good reason. In 2001, you published Daughters of Absence, a book about the transformation of the legacy of loss. Can you talk about your writing and your goals when you write?
May I read a perfect little quote Is that okay? Is that okay? It's just a 1 minute, but it's because it's the quote that I'm going to read it. I'm going to read it at the dinner, but it's by the writer Aaron Appelfeld, and it's from his book Beyond Despair. And he says, "Who can return the violated honor of the self? I cannot claim that art is all-powerful magic or pure faith, but one virtue cannot be denied it. It's loyalty to the individual, its devotion to his suffering and fears, and the bit of light which occasionally sparkles within him." And when I read that, I thought, isn't it really incredible to make art out of something that is dark? And I was coming across all these women that were doing incredible things, who are the only daughters to Holocaust survivors. One made a film, Aviva Kempner did The Partisans of Vilna. Deb Filler from Australia thought it was her job as the only daughter to make her parents laugh, and she became a comedian. And Petrina Kopeck, who is from the head of Juilliard, music at Juilliard, thought it was her job to make music for her parents. And all these women were doing such interesting things, these Holocaust survivors' daughters. But what we shared was that we were raised in a realm of absence, where absence was a reality of our parents' lives that we picked up. And out of that absence, we all wanted to fill up their lives with something beautiful. So that when I had that idea, and I literally was on a train when the idea came to me, and I didn't even have a notebook, and I took like little napkins and wrote all the ideas. And by the time I got off the train, I had contacted most of the women and kind of had the idea, and then 3 weeks later had a publisher. It just all was very magical.
These days, I mean, after you finished that book and it was published, do you have is writing also?
Well, I've written several books. I just by chance, I had another book published a year after this, and it was actually not meant to be a book. I had a fellowship in the countryside in Virginia where it was very, very quiet, and I had a month fellowship to paint, and it was so quiet, and I'm very urban, and I thought I'm going to go crazy with all this quiet. So I decided to make the subject of each day's work quiet. So one painting was called The Storm of Solitude, another was Touching Quiet, and the series, these paintings, were called Touching Quiet, was an exhibition in Washington, D.C., and then traveled. And I kept a journal during this time. So when I had this book published, the publisher said, "Do you have any other writings?" And I said, "I have this journal that I kept during Touching Quiet." So that became a book. I find sometimes that the painting, I need the painting instead of language, and sometimes I need the words alone. But I actually start each painting by writing. Every painting starts with writing.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. So it's like the thinking, the words like introduce you to the visual.
Yeah, and it kind of strips away language. I write and write and write till there's nothing left to write on the painting, and then I just have to start making marks with color. And it
makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I have to strip away the language.
Because, I mean, we are thinking like, their words on our minds all the time.
Yeah.
So you get them out of the way.
Yeah, and you can get to a deeper level, I think, of the creative process.
I understand that recently you've started to work with glass.
Mm-hmm.
How did that come about, and how's it different to work in glass as opposed to oil on canvas?
That is the best question, because it's totally magical. I went to visit. I've never done anything other than paint. I'm on the faculty of the Corcoran College of Art and Design in Washington, D.C. I teach abstract works on paper. I've always only dealt with canvas, paints, brushes. I've never even taken a class in sculpture. I went to visit a new art center in Washington, D.C., and I walked in, and there was a glass studio, and instantly felt as if I had known this my whole life, and asked the woman running the studio if she taught. And the next day, I came and started learning how to work with glass, and by 3 months later I was at the Corning Museum of Art in New York doing a fellowship, and then I was at Seattle at the Pilcher Glass School, and I just took to it. And it's a wonderful method for somebody like me who is, I don't have a tremendous amount of patience, and the emotions surface like very strong and very quick, and I have to work quickly, and also in the context of my life. But for an artist, I think I live a very traditional life. I'm married, I have children, I'm a wife, a mother, a grandmother. I'm very family-oriented. So I don't have the luxury that a lot of artists have of time. So I'm always in a rush. And with the glass, it's incredibly immediate. And you can work 12 pieces of glass and layer, and then there's light, you know.
So the light is certainly the criterion in working with...
It's amazing to me, going from the dark paintings with my father's number, where little teeny bits of postage stamp amounts of light came through, to the current work, full of light. Just amazing. 30 years. I didn't know that I was looking. I don't know what I'm doing when I'm painting. It's not like I say, okay, I'm going to. I do the work, and then it tells me. And only now, looking back 30 years later, do I see that, God, I've been looking for light all these years. And I found it after 30 years of working.
And we started out talking about Berlin. Let me come back to that. You've been selected to participate in the Berlin Wall Project.
Yes.
For the 20th anniversary of the fall of the wall. Can you tell us a little bit about the project and what your contribution is going
yes.
to be?
Yes, they selected 20 artists from around the world, actually. There's an artist from Australia and South Africa and Europe and the States and Canada. And each of us will be given a 3-foot by 4-foot section of the phase 2 of the original Berlin Wall, and we can do with it whatever we like, and then it'll be touring, and then I think it's going to be housed ultimately on November 9th, 2008 is the anniversary. 2009 is the 20th anniversary. That's right, it's going to tour for 2 years, 2007, 2009. And I'm getting to... My time slot that I have chosen to work on the Berlin Wall is in June, and I don't know yet. In my heart, what I want to do is Kristallnacht. You know how in Kristallnacht there was broken glass? What I want to do is create glass that is beautiful and complete. Then I want to break it, and then I want to rebuild it, because that's what I feel like my life is about. My parents had a beautiful life before the war. It was broken, and they recreated it. And I feel that's also about German history. You know, there was a beautiful Germany, then there was all this division and broken glass and a war, and then it was rebuilt after 1989. So I feel like this idea of mine will reflect the three parts of all of our history. But I don't know how I'm going to go about it. If I'm going to end up painting it or doing the glass, I'm going to see in the process. I'm very process-oriented, so I don't really know. And I don't think too much. I don't trust thinking. I have to feel my way into it and out of it and through it. Yeah, and we'll see what happens. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.